Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is February 4th, 2013. Happy Valentine's Day. You know, that's a holiday that's coming up this month. Also President's Day. So that is also a thing. Anyway, great conversation on the show today. I was really happy we had this young man as a guest. He's a 15-year-old YouTuber named Andrew, or Drew. I put out a YouTube video of this conversation, a video edited together with other news clips and B-roll, and I felt like it was really, really well produced, and it's part of a new thing I'm doing called School Sucks TV. So I hope you'll go to YouTube and find the School Sucks Podcast YouTube channel and subscribe to our YouTube channel and watch some of these videos. They are a lot of work, and I'm really hoping that having School Sucks and TV in the title of every video will get some eyes on what we're doing. School Sucks TV is actually a lot of material that, with the exception of today's show, you're not going to be able to hear in the podcast. We've done shows about, is math instruction necessary? We did a short show about phonics. We did a show about creativity. We did the first show, a teacher calls, and a private school teacher, and has just discovered School Sucks, and we explain the whole thing to him, even though he was already kind of on board with the ideas of liberties. And I encourage everyone to check it out. I also want to say thank you to everybody who has gone to the new schoolsexproject.com and signed up for a user account. And having a user account just allows you to participate in the forum, to share links, to comment on stuff, to make friends with other people on the site, and join groups, and start your own groups. So the new site is very cool. I hope you check it out. And I want to say thank you to it's over 400 new users who signed up in January. And I'm hoping we can double that in this very romantic presidential month of February. So today's conversation, look, I'll warn you, because I see what people do on YouTube as far as the comments are concerned. My guest talks about, you know, being influenced by Jesse Ventura, Alex Jones, and people on YouTube, like, get after him about this. And I couldn't believe that. There is some controversial stuff in this conversation, but I hope you understand why I would want to have this discussion with somebody who is in high school and is just, you know, over the course of the last 8 or 9 months, acclimating himself to these ideas. So I think this is a valuable conversation. I hope this relationship continues. In your comments, if you have something to say that is critical, please be constructive. Huh? All right. So here is the show. This is called A 15-Year-Old Wakes Up and Speaks Out. More stuff coming soon. Thanks for listening, and take care. First things first, tonight on the phone, we have Andrew, who has a YouTube channel called Teen Take. Andrew, how you doing?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Your YouTube channel was brought to my attention by one of my listeners sometime within the past week, and I watched, I think, almost all of your videos, and you are, well, how would you describe yourself? You're a 15-year-old freshman in high school who has discovered the philosophy of liberty and sprung into action trying to communicate this to other people.
Yeah, I've just kind of been mentally awakening over the past 9 months or so, and I've just been trying to influence my peers and other individuals that I encounter with the message of liberty and the message that you are an individual and you own yourself.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because you're spending about 35 hours a week in a place where freedom is not really one of the themes. So, you know, good on you for being able to embrace these ideas well in this place, because it's very, very rare, and it's really not even an afterthought, I think, for most people when they get out of the government schools that freedom even matters. So the first thing that I wanted to ask you about was, you know, you said you're trying to influence your peers, but can you tell me a little bit about what your influences were originally?
Well, really what got me started on the whole YouTube scene was this past summer. So again, about 9 months or so ago, I was at my friend's house, and as I've previously mentioned this to some of my other viewers, we were researching some videos on YouTube, and we stumbled across this one called the Denver Airport Conspiracy, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Jesse Ventura Conspiracy Theory Show, and that episode in particular that we watched was focused around the Denver Airport Conspiracy, which basically says that these various symbols and murals throughout the airport and outside the airport portray a certain type of New World Order, world government type of deal. So that really got me interested, and it had me starting to question, what role does authority really play in my life? And it got me starting to challenge authority and kind of dig deeper into the superficial picture that we see when we're faced with authority, and to kind of obtain an authentic interpretation from that.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. I was a history teacher prior to understanding any of these stuff. So I think I always had at least a little bit of interest in history and the politics that went with it. But as far as really kind of igniting somebody's interest, I find that some of these more conspiracy-oriented presentations, they're really good for that. You know, like Alex Jones wakes up a lot of people. Maybe he wakes them up to anger and outrage. But, you know, I think that there's something attractive and entertaining about conspiracy as a starting point that makes people want to do more research and get a better depth and breadth of knowledge. Did you find that to be the case with you?
Yeah, I definitely agree, because I think that a lot of the history that we're taught in the school system is, whether it's true or not, whether it's biased or fiction, fictitious, whatever you want to say, I think that it's essential to just investigate conspiracies, whether you think they're legitimate or not, because with me researching the Denver Airport conspiracy, I think it really awakened me to the truth, because it was more abstract than just the drab, dry, bland history that we're faced with in school. So I think that definitely got me thinking as well.
From there, you decided that you had to speak up once you started to get a better command for these subjects, and that's how the YouTube channel came to be?
Yeah, that was essentially where it began. I started watching Jesse Ventura, shows like Alex Jones, whether you think he's a fearmonger or not, whatever your perception of him is, but I think those people, they're just so passionate about the message of liberty, and once that kind of engulfed my soul, there wasn't really any turning back from that, and I just felt such a passionate persuasion towards these subjects and these topics that I knew I had to get the word out, and that's kind of where the advent of my YouTube channel came into play.
I do have to say this about Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura, even though I think both of them do valuable work. If you credit them as influences, I think it's interesting, and I think my co-host, Osborne, you would agree, that you are like extremely calm and well-composed in all of these videos. And I really think that that works to your advantage in communicating with a certain kind of person. Well, maybe, you know, Alex's approach might work better with some other people. But that was one of the things that when I first started watching, I was like, wow, these calm. And I think that a lot of people, Andrew, go through this. I know it was the case with me anyway. When you first start to understand these ideas, there can be a lot of anger. So I don't know if you experienced that or not, but I know that's pretty typical for most people.
Yeah, I do agree with you. For me, though, I'm not usually the extrovert of the group, so I can kind of contain my feelings a little bit better than most people. But yeah, Alex Jones definitely gets the anger going within everyone's hearts, I guess, or whatever you want to say. But I think that it's important to be calm about these issues, because you just need to portray yourself in a composed manner, like you said, to get the message across without kind of skewing it to look unattractive or anything like that. But then again, like when Alex Jones was recently on Piers Morgan, I'm not sure if you saw that or not,
yes,
but when he was on that show, there was a lot of people hating him, saying that, oh, you've done more bad for the liberty movement at this point than you have done good, because you're so angry about this, you wouldn't let Piers talk and everything. But you have to understand, those people that weren't too fond of that interview on the mainstream media, you have to be aware that just because he's on that show, that's a blessing for him, because he doesn't usually get time on the mainstream media, so he has to get as much possible information out at once. And by being angry, by being passionate about it, he's portraying the message in a more attractive way, because if he just sits there with all this passion of liberty and injustice within inside him, he's not going to get the message across. He's not going to awaken people and strike that passion that passion tendon in their bodies, and it's not going to get them interested. So again, if he's just sitting there monotone, he's not going to get the message across.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting take on it, too, because I think initially my reaction was what you described, that this is something that people should be upset about because his presentation might have seemed discrediting. In some ways, I actually agree with that. But the other thing is that him and his team probably watched enough of these Piers Morgan interviews to understand what was really going on there. I described on another show that I was on recently, I described Piers Morgan as basically like a pitching machine. Right? Like when, right. If you've ever been to the batting cages, the ball comes out. The ball on the Piers Morgan show is, why do you think somebody needs to own an AR-15? I'm pretty sure that is the only question he has ever asked anyone. No matter what you do with that ball, you can, you know, smash it right by him. And his next question would be, yeah, but why does somebody need an AR-15? Well, in the background, they're playing clips of like the, you know, the police arriving at Sandy Hook, or they're showing stills of these scary guns. So I think Alex Jones knew from his dealing with the mainstream media, not just as a guest, but as an analyst on his show every day. And don't get me wrong, I was very critical of parts of what he did, but I think he knew that that was not an interview. He was not going there to have a discussion, certainly not a debate with a human pitching machine that asked one question. So yes, his idea to put as much information forward as possible, that was something that when we did our show about that and we pointed out the problems that we had with both Alex Jones and Piers Morgan, that was one thing that we kind of overlooked. So I think that's a very good point. I do want to recommend a few other media sources to you before we let you go. But my next question was about your school experience. You are a freshman in high school. You discovered or started to wake up to this stuff over the summer. You went back to school in September. That must have made it a little bit more difficult to sit there 7 hours a day and to go through those routines. Am I right?
Yeah, it's definitely been an awakening. It's been an incremental awakening, though. For example, as soon as I got back to school from the summer break, it wasn't some revelation that I experienced, but it's definitely caused me to question authority, dogmatic precepts, as I've previously mentioned, and anymore, I don't just mindlessly accept what the teachers tell me. That's not to say that I don't have respect for the teachers in any capacity, but for example, like when we're taking notes in a class or something, and I'm just writing down what the teacher's saying or writing down what's on the whiteboard, from now on, or from the past, I've actually started questioning exactly what I'm writing instead of just blindly and mindlessly writing it down on the paper and then assuming that is the truth. So my basic essential kind of rule of thumb that I've used recently is to run this stuff past your brain, make sure it's logical, make sure it's common sense, and don't just blindly accept it.
Having more questions over the course of the last year, have you at any point spoken up and asked any of this stuff to some of these teachers?
Well, as I mentioned before, I'm kind of an introvert, so I try to kind of blend in with the crowd and everything, but I haven't really questioned the teachers necessarily, but in the future, and don't take this the wrong way or anything, but in the future, if something that I have a steadfast passion against, if one of the teachers says something out against that or something, I definitely will take action. I'm not just going to let them rule the classroom and propagandize them into believing what they believe. So it's definitely awakened me in that sense.
Yeah. And one of your videos, one of the most obvious, you know, indoctrination activities that goes on in school on almost a daily basis, and you made a video about this, is the Pledge of Allegiance. So was it this year that you come back and they say, all right, everybody stand up and let's do this little ritualistic chant here? Or was that something that you had kind of been suspicious of for a while?
It kind of just hit me recently, really. I was just investigating kind of these staples that evoke a sense of nationalism in our country. And the pledge is just a prime example. And it's filled with so many contradictions of principles that our nation is supposed to be founded on. And for example, in the clause where they say, or the stanza where they say, liberty and justice for all, one of the biggest contradictions that I see out of that is Obama's signing of the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, this past December, or 2 Decembers ago, sorry, and that permits the military to indefinitely detain any citizen or person within the U.S. indefinitely without habeas corpus or due process of law. And that really struck me as a complete invasion of that. And it was just crazy, really.
Well, I think it's interesting that this is something that obviously when kids start saying it, they have no idea really what it means. And division is a third grade concept, if I remember correctly. I mean, division is introduced to most people in public school in the third grade. One of the words in the pledge is indivisible, but you've already said it like maybe as many as 400 times before you even taught what the concept of division is. So really, at that point, it's just a chant.
Exactly. And division, it's so prominent and prevalent in our nation right now. The division of the Congress, the House, the Senate, the very political parties that run our nation. It's just a paradigm of corporate greed. And all of these political parties, or at least the majority of them, mainly the Democrat and Republican, they don't care about the people. They care about what gain they can benefit from and how they're going to do it in a manner that is inconspicuous so that the public can't recognize it unless they're awake.
Now, go ahead, Osborne.
Before we get past the pledge here, so Andrew, in the morning when everybody's saying the Pledge of Allegiance, what do you do?
I'd really not rather go too much into detail to that, but let's just say that I leave out sometimes the first couple of words.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying. So have you tried to, you said that when you made this discovery of the Jesse Ventura show, you were with some friends. Since then, as your research has continued, as your knowledge has continued to grow, have you tried to share some of this stuff with peers?
Absolutely. Namely, I think, yeah, because we were talking before we got live on air about Adam Kokesh and his show. Some of the videos that he's created, I've definitely shared with my friends. One of them, I'm not sure if you've seen it before, but it's called TJ's Dance Party.
Yes.
And Adam goes to the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, and apparently there's some ordinance that was passed there where it's illegal to dance, and you can get detained outside of Washington if you dance there. So he got a whole group of friends on Facebook, and they went in real life, obviously, to the Jefferson Memorial. They started boogieing, and then, of course, the cops came in. They assaulted the people. There was this couple slow dancing. The cop handcuffed them after saying it once, and then Adam doesn't comply. He's listening to his iPod dancing. The cop chucks him on the ground, and it's just brutal. So through that video, namely, I've shared that with my friends, and yeah, initially they think it's funny, but then some wire in their brain gets activated, and they say, this is our country that we live in. This is liberty and justice for all. This is our country. What is happening here? Why is this okay? All they're doing is dancing. And I think that's a major intrusion upon our liberties. And I think that's something very scary that may have an omniscient to the future of what it might hold.
So have the other students at your school seen your YouTube channel?
Yeah, a few of them have, but it's not something that I really try to commercialize throughout my school or anything. But yeah, a good majority of my close friends have seen my videos, and I think they appreciate my activism. And I think I am starting to waken up a lot of people after these recent shootings and stuff. I'm not saying that any of them are staged by any means or anything, but I definitely have been making these videos, sharing them with my friends, and just awakening them to the blatant propaganda that is placed in front of our faces. And in that sense, I think they are becoming mentally awakened and just becoming more aware of the corruption of the government.
And I was speaking to another high school student recently. She was a few years older than you, and she had also started a YouTube channel. And one of the things that I suggested that she seemed to really agree with from her experience was that one of the lessons of school, one of the things that I've talked about on my show going back years, is that in addition to conformity and obedience, one of the subtle but really consistent lessons of school is apathy. And I often worry that if, you know, a person has any kind of interest that isn't some hobby or sport, they're kind of labeled as an extremist. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
oh, you're interested in that? That's quaint that you think you can change the world and you want to. Somebody called me. What did I say on a show recently? I was born. Somebody said I was. They said, "Oh, you're so save the whales." Hmm? Like that was their shorthand for somebody who cares about anything, I guess. So has there been any of that reaction to what you're trying to say or what you're trying to do, Andrew?
Yeah, yes. I mean, mainly in my school, and I'm sure many schools across the board, if you go against the conformity that you're faced with and you go against the status quo, you're definitely labeled as some extremist, some unorthodox individual. And I think it just goes to show you that people are too afraid to leave their comfort zone of security and kind of mental blindness, because people think that if they can pull the cover over their eyes, if they can pull the sheepskin over their eyes far enough, and they can't visualize the problem itself, such as the injustices that our nation is faced with, being the NDAA being a prime example, I think that they think that's a sense of security. And if they trade their liberties for security via the government mainly, that they'll be secure. And if they don't see those problems again, they won't have to deal with them.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that because of the way schooling has gone for so long, and certainly what seems to be the priorities of society and culture, certainly over the last decade, and I know it's been like this in the past, that weighing the options of liberty versus security, I don't even think that that occurs to most people. I think they just say, oh, great, security. Because freedom is kind of like, by the time somebody becomes an adult, right? How much schooling have they been exposed to? Because college really isn't that much better. I mean, you have more freedom in your regular routine, but as far as the academic component is concerned, there isn't much more freedom than that. But by the time most people become adults, I think freedom is kind of a foreign concept. It's not like, well, I better make sure that I don't lose too much of my liberty. I think security and safety and comfort are really, they've just become the priorities for people. And I think that's been true through most of history, where freedom is kind of a foreign concept.
Yeah, an example of that would be adults and children, of course, too, blindly going through the TSA body scanners at the airport. Now, mind you, they're going to be abolished in recent, or in upcoming months, rather, which is great news because they emit cancer-causing radiation. So that's always fun, isn't it? Mm. And then, of course, they can see you naked, and other than that, you get molested by the TSA if you get a pat-down. But I think that they'd rather submit themselves, like you said, for security, instead of facing the reality that those machines can cause cancer. And whether those machines are actually effective against terrorism or not, they just submit themselves to them because they think that it's a sense of security.
Right. So we talked about these values of liberty versus security, but my one challenging question for you: on your YouTube channel, in the channel's description, there was another word, and that was equality. So I wanted to know what you meant by, striving for equality. Because here's my thinking. It's often a word that's thrown out more by the left to say, oh, we just want, you know, we want everyone to be equal. We want to level the playing field. And a lot of the time, it can serve as an excuse to do other things that have nothing to do with equality. So I wanted to get a sense of what your use of that word was all about.
Yeah, my perception of equality is relating to the channel and culture, obviously, is that equality is a very relative term, and I think it's very loosely thrown around, but the equality that I'm advocating is across-the-board equality. And this means, and this is coming from a right-wing, almost extremist, I consider myself an anarcho-capitalist, or libertarian, somewhere in that range of government regulation. And I feel that most of the actions taken by our government should not be as intrusive as they are today. I believe in a nearly completely voluntaristic society where people can deduce the truth for themselves, such as religion and other moral issues, and that's also referred to as objectivism. And I also feel that it should be physical equality, and that people can do what they want with themselves as long as it doesn't infringe upon other people's freedoms and civil rights, really. And this is going to sound pretty extreme, but quite honestly, I think that as far as the electoral college and election system of this quote-unquote republic that we live in is concerned, I think that if someone is 10 years old, because really, in my mind, anyone below that really can't, I don't know, I shouldn't really say that, but I think the election system should be based off of an idea that there's some type of test that one can take to vote, and according to the results that they have on that test from taking it. For example, if they can list the policies of both presidents or the GOP candidates, if they can list those or answer questions correlating to them correctly, then I think that should ensure them the right to vote. But because I think everyone in our nation has the right or should have the right to elect their leader and pick who governs them, although I don't really believe in a government, but since it already exists, I think that everyone should have a say in it. So basically, if you know the policies, if you know the president inside and out, or at least what they're pledging to do, then I think you should have the right to vote.
It's interesting. I mean, from my experience, I get what you're saying, that like this is the system that exists now. So until it can be, you know, until we can evolve into having a better system of voluntary society, what would be the best way to maximize the quality of the system we have? Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, basically. I just think that advocating equality would just eliminate so many societal problems that we're faced with today. And I think it would really just benefit humanity for the better.
Well, I think the most important kind of equality, I mean, yeah, equality is, it is a difficult term to work through, but I think there is an equality that most liberty-minded people are interested in. And that's that certain groups of people who are calling themselves government shouldn't be given extra rights or extra privileges or excused from, you know, following the same moral code that is expected of everybody else, right?
They're just elitists because they think they're above the law. And for example, if you think that Obama is going to pass legislation for gun control and military grade assault rifles, do you honestly genuinely think that the snipers sitting atop his daughter's school, do you think they're going to get rid of their guns? Of course they're not. They're going to protect the president's daughter because that entails the occupation of secret service, and they're going to be above the law.
Yeah, I would even take it a step further, too, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. You did two videos about gun control. The first video you made was right after Sandy Hook, and then you did another one when Obama put forward these 23 executive orders. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in America about, you know, from people who are very political and most of the time pretty left-wing. They talk about being anti-gun. And I said this recently to the other high school YouTuber that I interviewed, that these people are not anti-gun. They love guns. Guns is what makes the world go round for them, because without guns, there could be no Obamacare. Without guns, there could be no welfare state. Without guns, there could be no U.S. foreign policy. So I think that they just have to clarify, and this goes back to that question of equality, who they want to have guns and who they want to disarm. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. I think that I genuinely believe that nobody on this planet is for gun control. What they want is an end to violence. So by giving people or by banning guns, it's not going to solve the problem. Guns are still going to be produced, whether in the black market, if they're illegal for manufacturing or whatever. People who have the intent to go and tragically kill a school of 20-some children, they're going to do it if they have the means, the capital, and the intent to do it. Just because something is illegal, it's not going to stop them. For example, Connecticut, Newtown, Connecticut, has some of the strictest gun laws in the nation. I'm sure there was a gun anti-gun sign or gun prohibition sign on the front of the school, but did that stop Adam Lanza? Of course it didn't. So just by limiting the production or confiscating these weapons, I don't think it's going to solve anything. And as the Second Amendment entails, it just makes us vulnerable to a tyrannical form of government.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure I know this from just my years of experience working in and around these schools. All schools, I think I can pretty much say definitively across the country, are considered to be gun-free zones.
Correct.
So gun and drug-free zones. The last question I have actually just came up today when I was watching your most recent video on Monsanto. And I was saying to you before we started broadcasting that this is something that I've never even mentioned on my show. And my co-host and I think we both understand the template that the whole Monsanto and GMO factory farming model works from. In other words, yes, these huge corporations use the government, use the government's regulatory structure and the lobbying apparatus to get their way through regulations, through laws. But I felt like it might be a little irresponsible of me to have said nothing up to this point about, you know, Monsanto and GMOs, considering that it is a pretty hot topic. So I just wanted to give you a couple minutes to, you know, do an elevator speech here and let people know what they should, what you feel people should know about that.
Yeah, so I'm not a scientist, sure. But basically the process of genetically modifying food, otherwise known as GM manufacturing, and then ultimately GMO, genetically modified organisms, it goes down somewhere along the lines that one gene or one strand of DNA is extracted from one organism, and then it's spliced into another organism, and that creates a new type of species. So that seems completely fine and dandy. And the benefit of genetically modifying food is that it becomes extremely more resistant to weather and pesticides sprayed upon them. However, these pesticides aren't washed off in any type of way or sterilized before they hit the stores. So these pesticides are on your food. Now, personally, the best way to visualize this, in my opinion, is to think of spraying Roundup, which is manufactured by Monsanto, a main GMO manufacturing conglomerate, spraying Roundup on tomatoes on your salad. And tomatoes are one of the main victims of being of genetic modification. So it's kind of the equivalent to that. So it's basically spraying poison on your food. And this isn't just in tomatoes, it's in corn, which I'll talk about in a little bit, which deals with the epicyte gene, which is a gene patented by Monsanto that causes infertility and sterilization. And that's kind of creepy, in my opinion, that a corporation has the right to judge whether you can have a child or not and screw with your reproductive system.
Or just not care, really.
What's that?
Or just not care, or might be able to hide behind the idea that, well, that's not conclusive, because science can be political too, right? So some group that is against factory farming could fund science that's going to come to one conclusion, while Monsanto could have their own scientists. And a lot of these debates, the goal is to just make it a wash, right? To just say, well, we have our science, you have your science, so it's a draw. And what you're saying might be true, but Monsanto, in a lot of these cases, might just be able to hide behind and corporations like them might be able to hide behind this. Well, you know, the science isn't conclusive. Well, it might be conclusive, but as long as they have somebody saying something else, they could get away with saying, well, you know, that's inconclusive. That's something that I've run into.
Exactly. These scientists are just trying to prolong this information to carry out, in my opinion, since they're ignorant and they fail to acknowledge this very dangerous issue at hand. They're just trying to prolong, as I mentioned, their eugenicist agenda of depopulating the world. I mean, I honestly can't think of a better conclusion as to why they would be doing this. I mean, if they're not going to acknowledge it, I mean, besides the factor of capitalization upon these crops and other products made from GMO, it doesn't make sense to me. And all these products across the board, Doritos, Kellogg's brands, General Mills, Special K, all these brands that seem to have natural organisms and stuff, they're all terrible, dangerous, deadly products that cause infertility, nerve damage, sterilization, as I've mentioned before, and even cancer. It's just really crazy how the FDA doesn't regulate this. But the main reason why they don't is because many chairmen of Monsanto and the FDA, at least officers in the FDA, they hold positions at both Monsanto and in the FDA. An example, I'm pretty sure she was put out of the position recently, but Hillary Clinton used to be one of the heads of Monsanto. Now, that's a pretty creepy connection, in my opinion, that she knows about these issues of genetically modified foods, but because she's benefiting personally from them, she doesn't care to acknowledge them or bring any information about in the public.
Sure. This is called the revolving door between government and the corporate world, and it's probably most common in the defense industry. So somebody goes into, some presidential administration in the Defense Department, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and they make policy, right? And then they go back to the private sector and benefit from those policies. So this is very common. It has a name, the revolving door. I think that's what you're speaking to here. I want to go back a minute, and I know we're keeping you a little longer, and I know you have homework to do, which really breaks my heart, but because this is a great conversation. But you mentioned the word eugenics, and that's one of those things that people hear and they say, all right, buddy, that's, you know, because of how it sounds, you know what I mean? And this is one of my issues of not bringing people along too fast. Like, eugenics might not be conversation one. I mean, my audience, I think, is fine with it. But when you're introducing these ideas to somebody, if they know what eugenics is, which base this depopulation idea, and eugenics, it has a name. It's a real thing. There's real thought. There's real research. There's real people who went into this. But what is your understanding of that? What do you feel like is going on, or what have you found?
I really can't make a valid conclusion to that, but my best two examples of it really are genetically modified food. The feds don't want to acknowledge that there's anything bad in your food. I even made a petition on the White House website, but the White House isn't going to acknowledge it, not because it can't get enough signatures, but because they just don't want to comment on it. And another example would be vaccines, these flu vaccines. Now, it's a controversial issue, and there's really not too much scientific proof to back me up, but I honestly think I got the flu shot maybe 5 years ago, the last time I had it, and I've never got it any flu season since then, and I've been perfectly fine. Now, cross my fingers, but all these people who have never had the flu shot before, they get it, they're sick within 5 days. Pierce Morgan, he wanted to be a hero on his show. He got Dr. Oz on there, injected the syringe in his arm, and, oh, I'm a tough guy, I can handle it. There's no eugenicist formaldehyde in here. But then 10 days later, he gets sick. So what exactly are they trying to portray through these vaccines? That's my question.
So this is one of the issues that I have deliberately stayed away from on my show, and I'll tell you why. Because it is such a controversial subject, and there is so much at stake here, and a lot of the skeptics who I think bring a lot of valuable information to the table will say, this is not ground that anybody should be treading on until they're absolutely sure. You understand what I'm saying? When there's so much at stake with this issue, and somebody like, you know, celebrities are like billboards. Most of them are not really forming any of their own opinions or doing their own research. They're told about a cause. They say, oh, Coney. Yeah, I'm for Coney. Let's stop Coney. But they don't know anything. So Jenny McCarthy was really the lightning rod for this anti-vaccine thing. Do you even know who she is? She's
heard of her. I've probably seen she's an actor, isn't she?
Yeah, well, not even really. No. She stopped being famous before you would have even been watching television.
I think she was on MTV.
Yeah, she was like,
right?
She was an MTV personality. But she spoke out against this vaccine thing, and it really just seemed like she knew nothing about it and caught a lot of crap for that. So I'm intrigued by this story, but I'm not a scientist, and I don't feel I'm comfortable saying, look, if this is something that you care about, this is something that you should research and really, really get into it. There's plenty of people who are talking about climate change. There's plenty of people who are talking about, what do they call that, slagging, where they're bombing the mountains for
Fracking.
Slagging. Slagging is something else. Slagging is when you drag the thing through the river. But there's people who don't do research, and then they want to talk about these things. Like, the people who cheer for, all this climate change stuff have never cracked a book on the subject. Like Bill Maher's audience, for example. Oh, yay, Bill Maher. But they have no idea what they're talking about, and neither is Bill Maher. I see the vaccine thing as a little, it's a place where I'm uncomfortable. You know what I mean? It makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up just a little bit, because I haven't done enough research to say anything one way or another. So I'm just cautious in that area.
I completely see where you're coming from. My view on it is, I will confess that I am a victim of making claims that I haven't researched, but it's part of the learning process, I guess, not the learning process that you learn in school, though. And I think that whether it is a legitimate point or argument to make that vaccines are part of a eugenicist agenda, I know it is a bit out there, but I think that it's more important to just awaken and see why the pharmaceutical industry, why the scientists, why the government isn't coming out and saying anything to substantiate these controversial conspiratorial claims, because I think that just by ignoring them, it gives credence to the side of the argument trying to make conspiracies. But if someone of high authority would just come out and simply say the Denver airport conspiracy, there's no valid claims behind it. The GMO manufacturing industry, there's no valid science behind it. If they were just to come out and say that and give evidence, then that would put a ton of conspiracy theories to rest. But when people in high places get confronted on the streets and they just blatantly ignore the person trying to ask the questions, that's what's really scary to me.
Well, let's pick one that they did have to come out and speak about, because the official story that was presented to everybody was just so full of holes, and that was 9/11. Yep. Now you've grown up, you've become conscious of the world around you at 15 in a post 9/11 world, so you might not even really remember anything before that, like how different just the political conversation was. Not like there weren't, you know, manufactured panics and people freaking out about stuff prior to that, but the change that has happened in the last 12 years, it's been very gradual, but there's been enough of it that a lot of people have been very suspicious about that event. Obviously, there's a ton of research from, you know, the most wacky conspiracy guy YouTube channel to engineers and physicists on the side of the 9/11 truth thing. But when Popular Mechanics came out and they said, no, you know, here's everything that they say debunked, it didn't really change anything. I think that there, no one was really put to rest by, or put at ease, I should say, by that happening. So I think that part of the whole conspiracy thing, and we talked about a conspiracy context, that one thing that I always urge people to be careful about is once they start thinking about, now all of these things might be real. Eugenics is real. I encourage people to learn about the Fabian socialist movement in Britain in the 19th century. They saw the world as having a pest problem, and all of those pests were basically, you know, like 90% of the world's population. That's a real thing. The fact that there's false flag terror, that's a real thing. That there's all of these clandestine operations run by intelligence departments, that stuff's all real. But every time something happens, and this was one of my criticisms of Alex Jones and people like him, is that as soon as there's a major news event that is consequential, they try to fit it into this conspiracy context that they're already working from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that. But going back to the 9/11 truth program, advocacy, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Although the whatever organization released the 9/11 commission, it did leave a lot of blank holes, and that's what left conspiracies up in the air. So yeah, there's been multiple petitions and multiple organizations trying to call and mandate for a 9/11 commission number two to release more information that wasn't released to the public. And again, I think by just silencing those advocacy programs, I think that it's, again, giving credence to the conspiracy theories, and I think that's why they're formulated. Now, whether those conspiracies are valid or not, that's up to the individual to guess for themselves. But again, I just think by having an authoritarian figure or organization not acknowledge something that has a gaping hole in the truth, I think that is kind of suspicious.
Suspicious. Yeah. Yeah. I totally understand that. Yeah. I mean, you know, the reason why I wanted to ask that question is YouTube can be like a very cruel place, as maybe you've already learned, right? Once you start putting these ideas out, I've had people hit back pretty hard at me for some of the things that I've said or some of the claims that I've made on my show. So I just try, you know, I'm trying to say that from my experience, I've learned to be a little bit more careful before I make some kind of conclusive statement on something. It doesn't mean that everything that I've suggested wasn't true, but a lot of times people have called me on that, and I found YouTube to be generally, as far as the commenters go and the feedback, maybe you've had a different experience, but I found it to be generally unconstructive.
Well, I kind of beg to differ a little bit with that. I mean, the biggest piece of criticism that I receive on a basis is people saying that my mouth moves too much and I make them uncomfortable. Now, the main reason I do that, well, it's not voluntary, obviously, because I don't want to look like an idiot in front of thousands of people, but the main reason that I do that is try to pull an Alex Jones, if you will, and try to put more passion into my content, because again, as I mentioned before, if you just sit there in a monotone fashion, people aren't going to pay attention to you, because I've had previous YouTube channels in the past, and that has been the case, and it just doesn't really work out. But I think other than those few unconstructive comments, I've definitely received quite a saturation of constructive criticism and people trying to better my channel, mostly because they're liberty activists. But on videos such as my gun control, the two gun control videos that I released, I do get comments from, and I'll stereotype here for a second, liberals saying, oh, how can you have that stance? Blah, guns kill children, even though it's people who kill children, and stuff of that nature. And I mean, that's completely fine, because with whatever you do in your life, you're going to get haters and you're going to get people who like your content. So I think that's really the trade-off or the exchange that you make when you put yourself in the public eye. But I do, in the long run, think that it's worthwhile to get your message out there.
Excellent. Well, I've really enjoyed the conversation, and I wish you the best of luck. I think you're going to do great. I think you're off to a really good start. I've enjoyed your work. It's quality. It's good to start with quality, Osborne.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you seem like you know what you're doing technically, which is also working to your advantage. And I'm going to prepare like a little selection of videos. Osborne and I are both video producers. I don't know if you're familiar with Stefan Molyneux.
Yeah.
But Osborne has made, Osborne's production company has made a couple of his top viewed videos, and I've made a few as well. And really, you know, I hate to pat myself on the back right here, but I really think that schoolsucksproject.com would just be an absolute gold mine for somebody like you. We've been at it for, you know, a little over 3 years. We've done almost 200 shows. We've done series on history. We've done childhood/psychology series called Kids Are Not Defective, The Hidden Lessons of School. And we're currently doing a series on logic, which really pulls from a lot of the objectivist tradition. And I think that might be something that would be very valuable. So I encourage you to check it out, but I can send all that stuff to you in a private email. And in fact, we have a bonus content section on the website. If you go to schoolsucksproject.com and you make an account, let me know, and I'll give you access to everything so you can see all the archives and all that, because I really hope it's something that you could find useful. But
yeah, check that out.
Do you want to plug your channel before I let you go?
That would be fantastic. My YouTube channel is teentake, youtube.com/teentake. And my Facebook page, if you'd like to open some dialogue up on there, I'd love to respond to your messages and everything. It's facebook.com/teentake as well, teentake.
Excellent. Andrew, thank you so much for your time. And honestly, open invite. I would love to have you back on the show in the future, and we can discuss something else as your channel continues to progress and you put new ideas and new information out there. Osborne did say to me before the show, it would be good content if I, as a 35-year-old former teacher, got into a subject with a 15-year-old where the 15-year-old could school me. So maybe that's something that we could do in the future. I think that would be really enjoyable. But thanks again. Best of luck, and hopefully we'll talk in the future.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye. Okay, everybody, that was Andrew from the YouTube channel Teen Take. That was nice.
That was good.
Yeah, and
I wish I could talk to more 15-year-olds like Andrew.
I know, because I wish there were more.
Right.
You know? We're going to take a quick time out here. I have to reset a few things. We're going to continue our broadcast, but we're going to resume our show in about 5 minutes. How's that sound? And in the meantime, continue to chat. Very lively chat tonight, which is great. I didn't get too much of a chance to look at what people's comments were regarding that conversation, but I will try to do that. Well, we just take a minute here to reset. Someone says 15 years old. Wow, that's great. Someone says, I like this. It's a fun show. It's going to continue to be a fun show. Someone says, let's make Brett stare into his screen. Hey, Brett, look over here. That worked. Oh, we're also hiring a volunteer who will read the chat to me during the show, who will sit next to me and read the chat to me during the show, because that's kind of a tricky thing to do. All right, we're going to take a five-minute break. We will be right back after, I would say, this message, a word from our sponsors.
Sure.
We don't have any of that, though. We don't have a message to play. We don't have sponsors. How about a song?